Hi, and welcome to The Final Cut. Jason DeRosso with you. No new films releasing nationally this week. Cinemas are clearing the decks and making as much space as possible for the new Star Wars, which releases next week. So today, something different. A show dedicated to one of the most exciting directors working in the world today, whose films stir things up wherever they appear. And most recently, that's been on the festival circuit, and in particular, premiering at the Cannes Film Festival. He turned 85 last week, Jean-Luc Godard. American film critic David Bordwell, paraphrasing Godard himself, calls the Swiss-French director the youngest filmmaker at work today, which I guess is a way of saying that 55 years since Godard burst onto the world stage with his jump-cut gangster romance come road movie Breathless, he's still pushing boundaries. In this discussion, we're focusing on his most recent feature films and his embrace of digital technology. The way Godard uses pixels is like the way an expressionist artist uses paint. In particular, we're looking at 2010's film Socialism and last year's Goodbye to Language, which was in 3D. Now, it's almost impossible to describe these multilingual, non-narrative films in conventional plot terms. Film Socialism is set on the ill-fated Costa Concordia during a Mediterranean cruise and then in a family-run petrol station. Characters, if we can call them that, include a Nazi war criminal and a Russian detective. Goodbye to Language is filmed around Godard's house near Lake Geneva and features a couple who are played by two different sets of actors and a dog, Godard's own. The shards of plot and character both films offer find some solid ground with some familiar Godardian obsessions: European identity, the Holocaust, and the legacy of Western civilization. This discussion was recorded in October during a two-day symposium at the University of Technology in Sydney. I liken it to a kind of Godardians Anonymous support group where like minds discuss and try to unpack these astonishing, but sometimes opaque works. As you'll hear, a dose of humour helps. And humour, or at least wit, is not absent in Godard, of course. Godard didn't want to use subtitles on Film Socialism and only ended up providing the most threadbare of English translations to the Cannes Film Festival, which he termed Navajo English, after the speech of Indians in cowboy films. On this panel are Miriam Ross from Wellington's Victoria University, Julian Murfitt, director for the Centre for Modernism Studies at the University of New South Wales, filmmaker and Deakin University film scholar Dirk de Bruin, and Alex Gavronsky, artist and scholar from the Sydney College of the Arts. Now, I'd like to get you each to start off with one, I guess, the most striking impression you have of these very recent films of Godard. If there's one kind of idea that most strikes you about these films, what would that be? And I'll start with Miriam.
I think probably in the recent films, particularly Goodbye to Language, it's the mixing of technologies. He uses different cameras, some are very kind of low-tech ones, and Goodbye to Language obviously is using 3D technology, so it becomes very obvious when he's using the different cameras. So it's a continuation of earlier work when he'd have different aesthetics in one film, but I think now we really get that sense of different layering of textures and qualities that come from these technologies, a kind of very bricolage effect. So it's, as Alex Munt was saying earlier, this kind of mosaic effect. And you really get a sense of it because we're very attuned to the way different technologies produce different qualities in the image. And I think we feel that as we see these films.
Alex Gavronsky, if you were to sort of outline or identify one thing that strikes you most about this late body of work.
Very difficult to identify one thing in such a, you know, mosaic-like process. But for me, I think what's interesting is that there's a split going on through a lot of these later films. And what's interesting to me, on the one hand, is like they're very elegiac, on one hand. And in fact, they incorporate probably some of the most classical imagery from any of Godard's cinema up to date, like, you know, mountains, sunsets, the ocean, lakes, nature, you know, all of this sort of stuff. And on the other hand, you've got the sort of like engagement with digital media in a very, very particular idiosyncratic way. So there's this kind of paradox going on between something which is kind of backward, well, you know, elegiac and actually quite pessimistic, I think, and something which is actually engaging with, you know, the newest digital technology. So I think it's an interesting combination.
Dirk de Bruin, what strikes you most about these films?
Well, in trying to unpack them, I have some difficulty with that. But I kind of find myself going back to earlier work, to my own memories of what he'd done before. And I think that, I've kind of lived through this with him in a way. So even though at times there's not the structures that I'd like, I can kind of use as a resource the things that I've, seen or heard before as a kind of memory myself to place in these kind of fluid kind of mosaics. And for that, I also then go back to, the early 70s when there's this idea of the two avant-gardes that Peter Wallin brought up, where he sort of split the avant-garde in two. One of them, the first avant-garde, which was really coming from painting and abstract expressionism and sculpture, and it was coming much more out of the co-op movement. And then the second avant-garde, which was more this sort of to do with drama, a relationship to the mainstream and with performance, and which Wallin saw got out as a real exemplar of, And I think back to that, but then I kind of see it's almost, there's been a kind of shift that over all this time, Godard seems to have moved and brought these things together again. I always thought that split was kind of a bit of a fabrication anyway, but I kind of find the fact that there's all this visual, the shift to the visual and this malleable kind of imagery, I find really interesting that there's a sort of circle happening here for me.
Julian Murfitt?
I felt like I wanted to respond in Navajo. Antagonism. Europe, history, politics, love, aesthetics, intransigence, Yama, Godard.
I think answered in the spirit of the day, really. Julian, I want to ask you about this notion of a kind of mosaic cinema and talk to you a little bit about, ask you about how you think Godard is using a mosaic form of, I don't know if narrative is the right word, but a mosaic form of filmmaking, and what he's doing with the references that he's lassoing into these late films, especially.
Mm. There's, I would certainly agree that there's a great deal of joie de vivre in the turn to this new technology as an image making machine, but that joy is laced with melancholia. The melancholia consists in the loss of the photographic image as an evidentiary base or an indexical base, a relationship to history grounded in material process. And that melancholia also informs the mosaic structure, because it's as if the reference points now are precisely digital apparatuses, everyday apparatuses, iPhones, iPads, etc., in which we all spontaneously create our own collages, our mosaics, pathways through the information that beset us. So there's a homeopathic relationship between his form and the form of information today, which is no longer indexical, so it's unchained from history. And there's a prodigious productivity at the level of the image, but the loss of a narrative situation that's clear or coherent is a kind of melancholy admission that film has in a way lost what had been its function for a century.
On RN, you're listening to a special edition of The Final Cut dedicated to the late, late period of Jean-Luc Godard, who turned 85 last week, and a panel recorded in October at the University of Technology in Sydney. Godard, of course, is an innovator. He's been one throughout his career, and his most recent feature film, Goodbye to Language, won the Jury Prize last year at Cannes. Shot in 3D with a homemade rig and two consumer-level cameras. One moment, one technique that he repeats more than once in the film sticks in my mind. It's a shot of a couple. One of them walks away. One of the cameras pans to follow the person who moves while the other camera stays put. For a few seconds, you're looking at two shots simultaneously, half dissolved between each other, until finally the couple come together again and the two shots resolve back into one. Your eyes want to go in opposite directions as you look at this shot. You get a headache. It's a bit like a brain freeze from too much ice cream. Godard is not just trying to confront you physically with this. He's also trying to say something philosophically. Here's artist and academic Alex Goronsky.
I think for me, what was interesting about watching Goodbye to Language is the, you know, his materialist use of 3D. And particularly with his use of sound, I think his sound design, I think he's always been quite incredible, actually. But I think the splitting that happens there, that's a very, very sort of conscious use, you know, very, very, you know, in some ways quite deliberately crude use of 3D, splitting the two channels, but splitting sound from the image, splitting the soundtrack in half, doing things like, you know, you see the cruise ship at the beginning of the film come in from the left, a bit later on it comes in from the right, it's just a reversal of the same image. To me, I sort of read it as a kind of a metaphor as well, as to the kind of loss of any real kind of political polarity as well. So there is no, everything is centrist and consensual. So in a sense, he's trying to split this kind of oral visual terrain to actually speak of that loss. That's what I see.
Julian Murphy, I saw you nodding at that.
I'm very interested in it. I completely agree. This is one of the most interesting films about the reconciliation of a left and a right. Mm-hmm. Whatever that might mean at the level of political allegory, it's very difficult to make sense of that. But it's as if this new technology, this new capacity of an existing technology, has made him reflect upon the organic limits of the body itself in a way that he hasn't for a long time. That we have a left eye and a right eye, we have a left ear and a right ear, that we can play with that, and that we're all spontaneously, constantly, phenomenologically making one out of twin tracks of information. And to draw attention to that in as aggressive, as avant-gardist a way is exhilarating. You know, we haven't seen anything like this before. Everybody wants to make the single image work, you know. And Godard, back to his roots, is interested in prying apart the different tracks that make.
Yeah, I mean, I think his commitment to the non-seamless. I mean, it's like the way it's manifest in these films is real, and particularly in that film is very, very interesting because it does actually make a point of the inconsistency of visual material in a world which is saturated in visual material of all sorts.
Yeah, we talk about the spectacle, but the spectacle is in fact an incredibly complex, contradictory phenomenon. Right?
And also, to the extent that he works upon the fact that we have to do hard work in that screening because the 3D processes force your eyes to do so much work. And it's interesting that Goodbye to Language is, I think it's 80, 84 minutes, something like that, so way shorter than film socialism. So I think there's an interesting thing there in which the former film had a kind of duration which, you know, there was an endurance to it. And I think that was part of it. And I think, interestingly, this film, and it might just be because with a 3D technology they didn't have as much footage, but I think there's maybe a recognition that your body is going to go through so much and that is part of the process. And this, reconciling left and right is... it's a physical process. It's, it's an endurance to get there. So.
But it's not Avatar.
No.
No. I mean, the film has a physical impact. I mean, you mentioned Avatar before. I remember when I walked out of Avatar, I mean, I felt that the world was somehow pale compared to the lushness of what I'd just been in. Whereas when I saw Godard's film, I kind of walked out and I felt very disoriented and fragmented. Not in a negative sense, but sort of thinking through things, thinking about what all that was about. I continued to be active. I think another thing to remember too, in terms of this kind of physical impact, is the fact we're dealing with someone, he's later in life, where he is maybe, thinking more about his body, and he doesn't have to kind of tell stories in the same way because they're already so resonant inside him. They're sort of swelling away there, and he just a few things need to sort of, fly out of there every now and again for them to be relevant for him. You know, it's about tying things together in a very ambiguous way.
I'd like to perhaps ask you all to reflect on how, and maybe you don't have anything to say on this, but I think it's quite interesting to draw comparisons to someone like Terrence Malick because, and there's a comparison being drawn to Terrence Malick earlier today during this symposium, because Terrence Malick, it strikes me, is a filmmaker interested in the cosmic. And it strikes me that there is one way to sort of look at these late films in their mosaic makeup as having a touch of the cosmic about them. I mean, they are films with extremely beautiful images of nature, mountains, water, human bodies. But there's also a sort of sacred and profane element. There are images of decay. And yet I don't think I'd describe Godard as necessarily a sort of spiritual or there's no sort of overt religiosity, I don't think, in these late films. And I will also say that some of the images on the surface can be quite banal. I mean, they're sort of handycam images, and yet they sort of transcend those limitations and become quite beautiful. Mm. Who wants to take up that challenge?
I would have to agree that late Godard, since the origin of the 21st century, has become increasingly interested in questions of ontology, of what being is and what being in the world is, but in a completely different way from Terry Malick, whose worldview is essentially benign and spiritually affirming. I think Godard wants to discover what being is through under the rubric of a dialectic. The dialectic is not dead in Godard, right? It's the labor of making a world. It's both perceptual, it's behavioral, it's what you do in your relationship with other human beings, and it's political. It's the largest frame, the Mediterranean, the cradle of democracy and civilization. That ontology is world-making, but world-making is a political practice.
I think as well, whereas Malick's films are essential in the sense that they almost want you to have as much direct access to their sensory elements, whereas I think Godard is always showing that mediation. So we saw earlier today a clip from Film Socialism on the cruise ship where there was figures dancing in the kind of the disco on the cruise ship, and there was a sound there where it wasn't the sound of the music, it was the sound of what happens when you film something on your phone, it was that kind of,
it's like the music is it's too loud, isn't it? It's kind of distorted through the microphone of the device he's recording it on, isn't it?
Yeah, and so you're always, and it happens through sound, but it also happens through the kind of oversaturation, some of these images and other things where we kind of have a sense of that something is being used to present us with this vision. I think unlike Malick, which is to try and do that kind of omniscient, here, let me present you to this world, let me bring you to this world and to try to make it as transparent as possible.
I mean, I think that disco scene is actually one of the strongest pieces of cinema I've seen in Godard's work, or in a lot of cinema for a long time. I think the sheer recognition of what the medium is through the it's being presented as kind of an accident is so interesting. And the other thing as well, I think, is that beautiful shot, which in other ways would be utterly banal, of the sun, the setting sun over the ocean, with the interference of the wind. It's almost like the sun is kind of burning itself into, well, it's digital, but burning itself into film.
Yeah, and that wind sound on a poor little handycam mic that's just overwhelming it, but it's so expressive.
And it's almost like the material itself is fragile. It sort of threatens to kind of come apart. And I think that tension is something which is very, very particular to these films, and particularly those two sequences. Whereas Malick, I think, is, maybe it is more a broader issue of the difference between belief and doubt. Godard's always been a doubter. All of his films are about doubt.
But that disco scene is just wonderful. And just visually, I mean, it is a digital lens straining under low light. The image has degraded into rectangular chunks of algorithmic noise, really.
And I think the
noise of the music is just.
I think if you ever wanted to have a party and really annoy people, you could just basically just project that on a loop, and that would be pretty cool.
Empty your house, quick smoke.
For me, Godard. I mean, with Godard, I feel that I remain in my own body. I'm aware of my own body. I think Malick sort of takes me away. I kind of feel that I feel respected in the way that the images that I get from Godard, they're delivered knowing that they're images and not in a kind of in a self-reflexive way, and they allow me to kind of think through things myself, if not then later on.
Given that, okay, we know that he's far from being a digital native in terms of the way we normally use that expression to talk about the internet and so forth. I am kind of sincerely interested in what people think about how these late films may or may not be in sync or expressions of a kind of non-linear
interconnected world. Does anyone have thoughts on that?
Well, there was a comment before about, you know, moving in an instant from one aesthetic to another. This idea that, you know, we have to do so much in so little time and time is compacted and we're sampling all the time in our daily life. I mean, I kind of find that kind of language or that kind of, you know, that speeded up, slowed down, mixed up kind of way of looking and formulating a line of thinking. I think Goddard's responding to that.
Julian?
The largest question is whether or not the single work of art is an appropriate aesthetic response to the contemporary. David Lynch, for instance, his turn to the visual, to the digital, has really fundamentally consisted in uploading a whole bunch of experiments continually to his website. You watch them or you don't. It's a series rather than a work. So the question, Goddard is still committed to the principle of the work, the singular artifact in which all these various elements are combined under some sort of aesthetic law. Part of me feels this is a nostalgic response to the present, where we don't, I think, tend to attend to singular artifacts as rigorously as we did. We're much more adrift on culture.
Well, I mean, it's interesting in a teaching scenario as well, because when, you know, I ask my students to research artists who influence what they're doing, they usually just go to Google.
Yeah.
And so, A, they don't know where they came from. B, they don't know their kind of generation. You know, there's no background information there that they've tapped into. It's purely the image. You know, this is, I mean, which has a whole range of problems, I think, attached to it in understanding what an image is in the first place.
I think also speaking to your point about the particularity, I mean, there's the issue that's just come up with subtitles, because I think we now expect in the age of Google instant translatability, you know, increasingly Facebook and Google are doing this for us. And, you know, Goddard is quite adamantly not translating, you know, efficiently. So I think, you know, film socialism, the French, you know, version is very different from your English subtitle translation. Even Goodbye to Language, there's mostly translated. There's still entire sections which aren't. So
I often get the sense that part of that is this message to the audience of, well, if you really want to understand the works and everything about the works, at least in linguistically, there is no better, no other way than to just kind of understand what's being said. And if you can't, well, to a degree, you're just going to have to miss out on that bit.
Yeah, so it's almost like an anti-global stance. Mm. I mean, if you look at the end of, I mean, because we spoke briefly about it before, I think it's also one of his best films, In Praise of Love. The kind of final sequence of that, I mean, it's quite brutal and it's kind of quite obvious in a way, but his critique of American-style neoliberal globalization through the characters of the executives gone to buy the film, I think speaks very much to that particular issue, you know.
This idea too that, you know, something's missing in the language. I mean, I always, even an early Goddard not speaking French, having to read the titles and sort of missing the gesture on the face. I mean, that was always sort of part of that for me. And, you know, this idea that everything should be comprehended on one viewing, you know, that's, I think, something that, you know, and repeated viewings, looking at something three or four times to really get at some other things. I mean, this kind of work, you know, is open to that.
Let Godard induces a constant anxiety that you're looking at the wrong part of the screen. You're always looking at the wrong part of the screen. I'll get it next time.
Life's a bit like that, isn't it?
And that's where we leave this panel on the late, late films of Jean-Luc Godard. You heard Miriam Ross from Wellington's Victoria University, Julian Murfitt, director for the Centre for Modernism Studies at the University of New South Wales, filmmaker and Deakin University film scholar Dirk de Bruin, and Alex Gavronsky, artist and scholar from the Sydney College of the Arts. The panel was part of a two-day research symposium on late Godard, organised by Serena Masukor and Alex Munt, and hosted by the School of Communication in the Faculty of Social Sciences at the University of Technology in Sydney. And that's the final cut for another week. A complete one-hour audio of the discussion you heard is available on the website. Be sure to tune in next week for something completely different when we discuss the new Star Wars film, The Force Awakens. I'm Jason DeRosso. See you then.